Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Mal Leary, along with Maine Public's Steve Missler. Later, Steve will speak with Portland Press-Herald reporter Randy Billings about the race for mayor in Portland. But first, the newspaper headlines and the news networks were dominated this week by impeachment. Both of Maine's House members, Shelley Pingree and Jared Golden, voted for rules to govern the impeachment process that will include public hearings starting later this month. Steve, what's the political impact on these two Democrats who are up for re-election next year?
Well, I think for Pingree, I think the impact is pretty minimal, Mal. I mean, she represents a district where Trump is very unpopular, and therefore there's not a lot of pressure on her to make sure that the president's supporters are appeased about the process, which is really what this resolution was about. For Golden, it's a totally different situation. His district was a plus 10 for Trump. President Kerry, the district, earned an electoral vote from the district. And that means that Golden has to be more careful about supporting an impeachment inquiry that could make a lot of those second district voters very unhappy. I think that that's why Golden has been careful all along about his level of support for this inquiry. And he was also careful to highlight the due process that is outlined in the resolution, even though the real due process is in the Senate, where the actual trial would take place if this moves forward, while the House is really just responsible for the investigation.
I think one of the things that might have the impact here is, what else are they going to be able to get done while they're going through this process? They've got all the budget bills stacked up. It looks like we're going to have another continuing resolution. That's not good news for a number of programs here in Maine, and may not have some sort of impact down the road on the election when people say all you wanted to do was play with impeachment and you didn't pass a budget and you didn't do this and you didn't do that.
And that's why I think you see when the president in his just barrage of tweets at all hours is focusing on the fact that, you know, this impeachment process could impede the actual work of Congress. Now, we can all debate on whether how much work Congress actually does, even without an impeachment process, because they always seem to be at a stalemate. But this does help feed into that narrative that he's certainly pushing when he labels the Democrats as do-nothing Democrats.
Steve, the inboxes of political reporters like us have been flooded with emails. Earlier this week, when the State Ethics Commission fined House Speaker Sarah Gideon's 2016 PAC for violating state election finance laws. What's the story here? Is this going to hurt Gideon in her race for the Senate?
Yeah, I mean, judging by the tone and the ferocity of the emails and the pre-produced digital ads and noir tones that were immediately released upon this verdict by the Ethics Commission, you would have thought Gideon had just committed an act or an elaborate scheme to, I don't know, ask a foreign government to influence the election. Now, all kidding aside, this is just the beginning of what is going to be an insane campaign. First of all, the law Gideon violated is there. It's an important law. It's there for the purpose of making sure people know where donations are coming from and that they can't be funneled through so-called straw donors. The problem is that if Gideon was actually trying to deceive the public, she did a really lousy job of doing it, because she actually made the effort to disclose the donations that ran afoul of the law. It's like running a stoplight and then backing into the intersection and waiting for the cops to come catch you. Is it a dumb mistake? To be sure. But I think it's also important to understand why the GOP made such a big deal over it. I mean, it's because Sarah Gideon, despite her position as the House Speaker, is relatively unknown. And this is really an effort by the GOP to help define her for voters. And it would seem clear from their nicknames, Guilty Gideon, Shady Sarah, that they're going to do that by portraying her as some ethically challenged leader of the legislature. I just really viewed this as the beginning of that effort.
And there's been so many ads on the internet attacking her. I mean, you go to any of the newspaper websites, you go to many of the sites I go to, there's a pops an ad about Shady Sarah. That's got to have some sort of an impact on this race, as much in the general election if she gets the nomination, but also in the primary, because as the old saying goes, any publicity is good publicity, and the Republicans are giving Sarah Gideon all kinds of publicity in that primary, and the other candidates are there going, hey, we're running too. That's a real problem, I think, that's going to be more so is they focus like a laser on Sarah Gideon.
Right. And I think also by focusing on these campaign finance issues with Sarah Gideon, they kind of they do irritate, I think, the Democratic base. I think, you know, maybe that will benefit Betsy Sweet in some way, despite the fact that, you know, the GOP operatives are really elevating Sarah Gideon by basically making her the de facto nominee by focusing all of their opposition efforts on her.
Typically, the Political Pulse focuses on state politics, but this week we're putting the lens on an intriguing mayoral race in the city of Portland. To help us do that, Steve spoke with Portland Press Herald reporter Randy Billings, who covers the state's largest city and has been chronicling every twist and turn of a contest that will be decided on Tuesday.
So let's get to it. Let's start with a 30,000-foot view of this contest. From an outsider's perspective, I'm constantly struck by how the politics in Portland look and sound a lot like the debates we hear at the state and national level, whether it's paid family leave, affordable housing, immigration. But there's one key distinction. In Portland, it's not Democrats and Republicans engaged in this debate, but really just Democrats who have varying degrees of comfort pursuing a progressive agenda. I mean, is that a fair assessment, Randy?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the last Republican to serve on the city council was Cheryl Lehman. She was there for 30 years. And it is sort of, you know, Democrats serving on the council. And then the arguments do kind of break down into on what scale of progressivity are you?
And why is that? I mean, it seems that when most people think of municipal elections, they're thinking of things like school funding, zoning ordinances, and property taxes. Why have Portland politics come to resemble our state and national politics? Why are we seeing pushing policy that are basically national policies? Why is that happening in Portland, do you think?
Well, to some degree, I think politicians in Portland, you know, still look to sort of differentiate themselves, you know, from each other. And bringing in these ambitious initiatives is sort of one way to do that. And I think it also is a little leftover from the LePage years, too. You know, after 8 years of Governor LePage, Portland really got in this groove of feeling like they had to really do everything on their own if they were going to make any progress on a lot of the issues that it was facing. So, and I think, you know, Janet Mills was recently elected, and I think there's still a strong contingent in Portland that still likes to see them pick up these national Democratic issues, try to make progress with them in Portland in hopes of pushing the state to follow suit.
All right. So I feel like this is a good time to sort of introduce the candidates. I think most people are probably familiar with Ethan Strimling, but just give us a quick bio. What's his argument for re-election and who are his challengers and what is their argument to get him out of there?
Ethan Strimling is the incumbent. He's 52 years old, been Portland's mayor for the last 4 years. Prior to unseating Mike Brennan in 2015, he was the executive director of LearningWorks, a nonprofit that helps low-income and immigrant families and at-risk youth. He's also a former state senator. He's being challenged by City Councilor Spencer Thibodeau, 33-year-old real estate attorney. He's been on the council for 4 years. Kate Snyder, a former school board member, current executive director of the Foundation for Portland Public Schools. She served 6 years on the school board and the underdog of the race. And I think, you know, definitely one of the more entertaining candidates of the race is Travis Kern. He's a 31-year-old waiter at Empire Kitchen. He did some stand-up comedy and things like that.
And Travis is also, he's not raising any money, is that right? He's just sort of running a very unconventional campaign.
Yeah, very unconventional. And he just started putting up signs, some hand-painted signs around town.
Let me just pull back real quick on Kate Snyder and Spencer Thibodeau. What is their argument against Strimling? Why do they think he needs to go?
Well, basically, they point to this conflict, the tenor in city politics over the last 4 years. Now they kind of look back on those years and they say, look, you know, Ethan, within his first year, he made a pretty hard pivot, turned into a more progressive, more activist sort of mayor, you know, really clashed with a city manager to the point where they don't have much of a relationship at all anymore. And he repeatedly was questioning and sort of pushing the boundaries of what he thought he should be allowed to do in City Hall versus what others thought the charter defined for them.
Yeah, I'm going to get to the city charter in a second because that might help explain why this conflict is it seems to always happen. What's interesting, I think you alluded to this just a minute ago, is that when Strimling was elected, his big case for becoming mayor was that he would be, quote unquote, the listener in chief.
Ethan turns around and he says, look, you know, I have been the listener in the chief. I've been listening to the people of the city, and you're just not agreeing with the policies that people in the city want.
Let's get to the city charter and the position of Portland mayor. This mayor is more figurehead than somebody who can basically enact policy by fiat. How much of the limitations of that position are playing into this tension between the current mayor, Ethan Strimling, and the city council?
Yeah, the mayor position in Portland, it's not like Boston, it's not like New York, it's not like the mayor says something and it happens, and if you don't do it, you get fired and you can hire someone. I mean, it was deliberately made to be this hybrid position, and part of the impetus was, you know, to unite a fractured view on the council, to speak on behalf of residents, and to have just a little more accountability and a longer term in City Hall. Previously, the mayor was chosen by the city council, would serve for 1 year, and then someone else would come in. So they thought, let's pay someone to do this full time and give them a 4-year term so they can span out over some turnover of council, give them some time to actually set some priorities. But they wanted to maintain a professional city manager to protect the finances of the city and the fiscal health of the city. And that's where, like, all of this friction really comes from, is like, where do these lines sort of begin and stop? They're not real black and white. There's a lot of gray in it.
You've reported that 3 of the 4 candidates are raising a lot of money. Can you kind of give us an overview?
You have the top 2 candidates, each hit 6 figures, according to the most recent reports. Ethan Strimling's upwards around $160,000, and Spencer Thibodeau's right behind him, $110,000. You got Kate Snyder, you know, she's pushing that. She's in the mid-80s, and then Travis, of course, isn't raising much of any money. And when you look at who's supporting these candidates, you know, for Strimling, it's, by and large, it's union support. They're really fueling his campaign. And when you look at Thibodeau's, you know, he's a real estate attorney. He's getting support from a lot of professionals, you know, people in the real estate industry, real estate brokers, landlords, developers. Kate Snyder, she has a pretty broad base of support out there. I mean, in the recent report, it looks like some of the developers and real estate attorneys are also hedging their bets with her now. Mm. You're seeing some of the same donors donating to Kate, who donated for Spencer now. But then you got also a lot of educators supporting Kate due to her previous service on the school board.
I have to wonder, though, you know, when we've just talked about how limiting the position of mayor actually is, why aren't all these donors kind of going around that and going to the real power, which is actually the city council? Why don't they just fund those candidates, I wonder?
It may not have a lot of hard power in terms of who you can hire and who you can fire, but I mean, there's a lot of soft power involved in this. I mean, you got a bully pulpit. You're doing this full time. You can build coalitions either in the council or outside of the council. You know, as Mayor Strimling has shown, I mean, you can run a news cycle if you want to. And I think there is also this other sort of expectation that, look, if you're a Portland mayor for one term and you get reelected and you do a good job for 4 to 8 years, well, that could set you up for, you know, a higher office. Mm-hmm. And I think that was in the Charter Commission's mind when they did it. It wasn't the purpose of setting up the position, mm-hmm. but I think it was one of the sort of like fringe benefits of it, to say, okay, well, you know, we can cultivate some statewide leadership, you know, by giving this a higher profile, but with not all the risk of turning over all the keys to this person.
And we should remind people that when Portland voters made the change to select the mayor themselves, they also switched to ranked choice voting, a system that allows voters to rank candidates in order of preference. Randy, you've said this is a very tough race to handicap. So does that mean you're not going to make any predictions?
You're not going to get a prediction out of me.
Thanks to Maine Public State House Bureau Chief Steve Missler, and special thanks to Portland Press Herald reporter Randy Billings. I'm Mal Leary, and that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. We post new versions of our podcast each Friday afternoon. Download it at mainepublic.org/politicalpulse or wherever you get your podcasts. You can hear most of the Political Pulse Sundays during Weekend Edition and a shorter excerpt on Monday's Morning Edition.